Tales of Antiquity. Stories of the romantic past captured through the eyes and ears of Eustace Glean, collector extraordinary. His story for today,
The London-Brighton Run. There we are, your sherry. Now then, what can I show you this afternoon? Ah, what about this? A most attractive carved ivory bracelet. Javanese, you know. It belonged to a Matilda Craigie. And let me tell you about it. It's quite a touching little tale. It was to the London terminal of the Southern Railways that Matilda Craigie made her way upon a cold January morning in the year 1877. Railways in Britain had made a remarkable stride in the latter half of the 19th century. However, the huge clock over the main entrance hall showed 9:35 precisely, just 20 minutes before Matilda's train was about to start its journey to the South Coast. Somewhat dismayed at the constant noise and bustle, she purchased her ticket and made her way towards the buffet room, where she might escape the deafening din and biting January cold.
Yes, dearie, what would you like?
Nice cup of tea.
Please. It's a wind, isn't it? Mm. Reckon it must be about the coldest January we've had since 65.
I've got nice Chelsea to go with it.
Fresh in this morning.
Just the tea, thank you.
Oh, there you are, then. Nice and steaming. Penny, that'll be.
Oh, dear. I don't seem to have anything smaller than a florin.
Oh, that's all right.
Yeah, I've changed.
It's all right, sir. I can change a 2-shilling piece.
I have some tea, too.
It's awfully kind of you, but...
Oh, think nothing of it. Not too much milk, please, miss. This is Craigie, isn't it?
Yes. I'm afraid I don't quite
Pearson.
Know where...
Alfred Pearson. We're neighbours.
One tea. Not too much milk. Tuppence, thank you.
Oh, thank you.
Tart, I'm sure.
I'll take these over to that table by the fire.
I'll say. Keep your eye on that one. Cheek of the devil, some of the tops you get in here.
Know what he's after, don't you?
But Matilda didn't know, and said so. He was her neighbour, she explained, and went to join him by the fire. Alfred Pearson then went on to explain that he lived with his mother in the double bow-fronted house almost opposite her, and that he was the young man who unfortunately knocked her husband down when he was out one day riding his bicycle. Matilda remembered the incident.
Oh, how funny George looked. So undignified, sprawled in the gutter. His top hat over one eye and his ties wrapped round his neck.
I'm afraid he was a bit put out.
I'm afraid he wasn't.
How is your husband?
A little too hot.
I beg your pardon?
My tea. It's too hot.
Oh.
George. Oh, he's much the same as usual.
Nice chap.
Yes. Nice.
Yes. I'm going to Brighton.
How extraordinary. So am I.
Ah. So, we're both going to Brighton. How nice.
Yes.
We can go together.
Can we? Yes, I suppose we can.
How nice.
Nice. Yes. Oh, dear!
And for no apparent reason, the children burst into tears and fled from the table into the ladies' room.
Another two teas, please, miss. One with...
But not too much milk. Yes, I know. Here. Where's that lady, then?
Lady? Oh, she went to the ladies' room.
Oh, yes. You upset her, have you?
Now, why on earth?
Two teas. One with not too much milk. Tuppence. I've been watching you. Seen your sort before.
Whatever do you mean? I'll have you know, my good woman.
I am not your good woman.
You know your own business best, I suppose.
Matilda returned somewhat shamefaced, apologized, and thanked Alfred for the extra tea. She then went on by way of explanation to say that it was her mother's idea that she should get away for a few days, although Brighton seemed an odd place to choose in January, but then it wouldn't be so crowded, Alfred commented. He then told her that he would be staying with a friend of his father's, a somewhat irascible old fellow who had gout and with whom he didn't get on particularly well.
Has rather odd ideas about the modern generation.
So has George.
George?
My husband.
Ah.
It is the reason I am leaving him.
What did you say?
That I am leaving my husband, Mr. Pearson.
But you can't.
Oh, but I can. What more I have. Which is the reason I am to catch the 9:55 to Brighton. And if you mean to accompany me, we had best be on our way. That, if I am not mistaken, is the 9:55 about to depart now.
The journey down to Brighton was bleak indeed, with the stark winter countryside slipping past outside, everything covered in frost and ice. Even the conversation appeared to be frozen somewhat as they travelled the first 15 minutes in total silence. At length, Alfred said,
"What, will you do in Brighton, Mrs. Craigie?"
"Do, Mr. Pearson?"
"I trust you have relatives there."
"Relatives? No. Merely a friend. I am to meet a friend."
"I see."
"A gentleman friend."
"Oh, dear. Lewis."
"No, Mr. Pearson. The gentleman's name is Charles."
No. I merely observed that we're about to pass through Lewis, the town."
"Oh."
And again, they lapsed into silence until...
"What a pretty bracelet you're wearing."
"Indeed, it is lovely. George brought it back from Java when... Oh, dear. I must not mean to wear it again. Oh, dear.
Well, what is it, Mrs. Craigie?"
"I am so confused, Mr. Pearson. So, might we talk, do you think?"
"Are we not talking?"
No, I mean, I simply must unburden myself."
And without further ado, she unburdened herself, telling him how she had been married for 5 years, what a splendid man George was, that he was retired after many years working for the Dutch government, and he was a wealthy, dull, pompous, and dreary gentleman. Oh, so dreary. And that she simply couldn't bear another moment with him. She also happened to mention that he was a good 20 years her senior, and... Here, Alfred confessed to being somewhat confused, poor fellow. What if they were so violently unsuited? Were they doing married to each other? Again, it was her mother's doing. The Craigies were so awfully well connected, but then, again, oh dear.
"You must think me so terribly fast and modern."
He told her he thought nothing of the kind, but hadn't she best discuss it with George, her husband, before... Oh, but she left him a note, propped against the mantel clock, with all the details. And if he should follow? No, he was much too much the gentleman. Besides, she'd left no address. At length, the train pulled in at the Brighton terminus, and they both prepared to go their separate ways. And so they're absolutely refusing all offers of help with her baggage. The outfit was perturbed. There was something a trifle odd in Mrs. Craigie's demeanor. He therefore took the liberty of ordering his cabby to follow the lady at a respectable distance. Finally, she came to a small shelter on the seafront, opposite Brown's tea shop. Alfred waited in his cab, watching. Half an hour, and when no one arrived to collect the lady, Alfred decided he must do something.
"Do you mind if I join you, Mrs. Craigie?"
"No, Mr. Pearson."
"Your gentleman friend not yet put in an appearance?"
"There isn't a gentleman friend, Mr. Pearson."
"No child?"
"No, Mr. Pearson, no one named... Oh, what am I to do?"
"Why don't you tell me why you really left your husband, Mrs. Clinton?"
"Oh, it was all so silly. It was all to do with being jealous."
"Your husband?"
"Oh, no, he isn't in the least bit jealous."
"Ah, then it was you who..."
No, you misunderstand. George is all those things I said to you. Dull, plump, pompous, and nice. Oh, so confoundedly nice. You simply cannot understand how demoralizing it can be living with someone so nice. Not a day went by that was not exactly as the day before. There were times when I felt as though I were a mere ornament.
something of which one is aware and fond of, yet does not notice all that often. If only I could get him in a rage, I thought, a jealous rage, then perhaps he might take notice of me. So I invented a lover.
Charles?
Yes. And do you know what he did? Laughed. He laughed, Mr. Pearson. I have never been so humiliated in my entire life. That was when I decided to write him a letter, telling him I was running away with...
Charles?
Yes. And now I simply don't know what to do. I've been so foolish. Ruined everything. He will have read the letter by now, and how he'll laugh. He'll laugh and laugh until he's fit to burst. I don't think he cares one jot whether I'm there or not. Oh, dear. Oh, dear, oh, dear, oh, dear.
Alfred Pearson was most touched by this tragic display of emotion, and being of a kindly disposition, persuaded Matilda to accompany him back to London, and her husband. But outside the Craigies' residence, Matilda was having second thoughts about the wisdom of returning to George and his probable amusement.
Oh, dear. I'm so nervous.
Go along inside with you, and retrieve that letter before your husband finds it.
Yes. You're quite right, of course. Thank you, Mr. Pearson. I'd never have had the courage without you.
What are neighbors for, if not to help each other? In you go.
Oh. Now for the letter.
Hello, my dear.
George, I didn't hear you.
Where have you been all day?
Shopping?
George, there was a letter.
Letter? Oh, this. I'm sorry, my dear, I didn't get around to reading it.
Oh, well, no matter now. I can tell you myself what I've been up to all day.
Good. And I've something to tell you, my dear. I've decided what we both need is a bit of a break.
What kind of a break, George?
I've booked us into a suite for 2 weeks at the Imperial Hotel.
Imperial?
Brighton.
Brighton? Oh, George. Brighton?
What the deuce are you laughing at, girl?
Nothing, George. Nothing at all.
Don't you want to go to Brighton?
Oh, George, you couldn't have chosen anywhere more appropriate.
And so, Matilda and George Craigie went to Brighton, and Matilda discovered that she wasn't just an attractive ornament after all. Here, the bracelet is yours. They'd bring you as much happiness as the Craigies. Good afternoon. Do pop in again when you're passing.
That was Tales of Antiquity with Valerie Dunlop, Linda Stewart, James White, and Dennis Falbig. Written and produced by Kenneth Hendrell.